I'm Susan Donner. I'm one of the associate deans here, and I have the pleasure of introducing our tonight's speaker, Dr. Yusun Park. Dr. Park is a resident faculty member at the School for Social Work, and her topic tonight is Whom Should We Serve? Analyzing Social Worker Practitioners' Views of Undocumented Immigrants. Dr. Park received her BA from the University of Massachusetts in Buddhist Philosophy and Art, her MSW and PhD from the University of Washington in Seattle. She came to our faculty from the School of Social Work at Columbia University, where she was an assistant professor. In her teaching and in her writing, she's interested in applying the theoretical and methods of post-structuralism. She has also been using and studying the history of social work practice with immigrants and refugees in the United States using post-structuralist methods of discourse analysis. She has also been the principal investigator on several grant-funded research projects ranging from social work involvement in the internment of Japanese during World War II to issues of obesity, diet, and health in a variety of communities. Her publications and presentations are numerous, particularly in the areas of immigration, health, and immigration communities, racism, disaster response, and post-structural theories as applied to social work education and teaching. This past fall, she received one of social work's most prestigious awards, the 2010 Society for Social Work Research Excellence in Research Award for her paper, Facilitating Injustice, Tracing the Role of Social Workers in World War II Internment of Japanese Americans. It's one of the best papers I have ever read. So everyone says that they are pleased to introduce whatever speaker they are introducing, and it's almost all of the time usually true, maybe 99% of the time. But I want to say briefly a little bit about why, in fact, I am particularly pleased to introduce Yusun. The reasons are multiple. I like her, I enjoy her, and I consider her a friend. But more significantly, and at a less personal level, she's done a lot for this school. I have heard more than one student say her teaching demonstrates the intellectual rigor they came to Smith to get. She is an outstanding teacher. She invites us all to question our assumptions about almost everything. And she demonstrates to students and faculty that it is possible to live in the messiness of complexity and tolerate the fact that the human condition leaves us all seeing through a glass darkly. She is the opposite fundamentalism of any kind. She is willing to trade off the human longing for certainty for a world in which questioning our certainty is a check against destructive bias. It sometimes means she's willing to say things that are not popular. For me, that is a gift to us all. So welcome, Yusun.
It is hard to see from here. So I think that introduction is another way of saying that this presentation is going to leave you with questions and definitely no answers from me. It's a messy problem, the problem of the undocumented. And the one thing I should warn you about is it's a work of discourse analysis. It's a textual analysis. Therefore, you're going to see lots of words on lots of slides. So, all right, pay attention. Are you ready? You're going to hang in there with me, right? Because it's going to be complicated, and it's not going to be all that simple to follow. So, in the recent years, social work has begun to argue in the literature about the need to pay attention to the ways in which immigration policy and the patterns of migration to the United States affect social work practice. And we've just begun to do this, really, especially about the undocumented in the past couple of years. And I think this is a good sign. It's good news that we're beginning to try to formulate new interventions and talk about the importance of formulating interventions for social workers. But from my review of the literature, there is a really conspicuously missing piece. And what's missing is what's usually missing from social work literature, I think, which is stopping for a minute and looking at some of the fundamental questions. So we're rushing to build interventions without actually stopping to ask, what do we think about any of this? So this is what this study is about. So the questions that I was really interested in trying to get is, so these are some of the fundamental questions that I'm interested in. How should social work as a profession and a discipline position itself on the issue of undocumented immigrants and the topic of undocumented immigration? How do social workers think of the issue of undocumented immigration? Who deserves our help and resources? Who should be included and who should be excluded from our services? And these might strike you as questions that are self-evident, but you will see, I think, throughout this presentation that of social workers, this was a survey of social work practitioners, that the issue isn't quite so simple and that we as a profession do not agree on any of these answers. So this was a survey, it was an online survey, and overall we got about 1,100 post-BSW and post-MSW practitioners across 47 states. There were more, but by the time you canceled out all the ones who didn't finish and so on, that's what we ended up with. It was an 82-item online survey with one open-ended question, and all it said was, do you have anything else to add? And surprisingly, 198 people wrote in comments, and the comments range from, you know, one sentence to 450 words, which was the maximum. Some of them in all caps, as you will see. And more than 50% actually focused specifically on the issue of the undocumented. And we ran numbers on this population thinking, you know, are these the crazies or are these the people who are particularly interested? And it turns out that this population who did write about this, who did write the comments, actually, were no different from the rest of our sample. So it was a pretty, you know, pretty generalized to the rest of the population of our sample. And so what I've done here is to look at the qualitative text that they've written in, and I can't say, actually, that they generalize to all of social work, so I'm not really saying that this is what social workers think. It's a non-random sample, and some statistical god would strike me down dead if I dare to say that it actually could be generalized. So how I'm using it really is to show you these commentary really as kinds of exemplars about the types of issues that come up in social work practice around the issue of undocumented. Stop me and ask me a question if you want. I may not answer, but you could ask me. There's a lot to get through here, as usual. Like I said, this is a work of discourse analysis. And feel free to ask me more about that after. I'm not going to really talk a whole lot about that. It's a textual analysis, and it's predicated on a post-structural conception about discourse. And what that really means is, to me, is that no usage of language of any kind can ever be considered neutral, or impartial, or apolitical. All speech, all words, all deployment of language is a political act. So what that means for these set of responses is that I'm taking what people have said as particular kinds of acts that construct undocumented populations, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. And I'm going to read you a little bit from the paper, just because I want to be really careful with the language here. And it's a note on language. So here goes. You ready? We work from the theorized position that all terms used to designate foreign-born persons who reside and work without governmental authorization within the United States are considered to have political implications. our decision to use the term undocumented immigrant, at times shortened to the undocumented for brevity, to refer to this population rather than the official term unauthorized resident, which is employed by the United States Department for Homeland Security, where the popular term illegal alien or illegal immigrant is thus a marker of our stance on the topic. Through the usage of the term undocumented immigrant, we aim to underscore our understanding that there are significant consequences attached to undocumented status, and to assert our position that legality is a contested socio-political construction rather than a neutral descriptor of personal identity. Conversely, our disinclination for the term unauthorized, which is what the government uses, signals our analytical position that the concept of authority is itself central to the debate on immigration. Finally, we oppose the terms illegal alien and illegal immigrant as conflations of the legitimacy of persons with legal designations of immigration status that symbolize intolerance for and discrimination against immigrants who lack the legal rights of residence. So that should tell you something about my position and how I'm looking at this topic. One of the first things that I really want to show you is, do you know what the reference is? So the song remains the same. And why am I showing you this? Xenophobia. Cycles of nativism have always been with us in America, despite our fabled myth of refuge, our open doors. If you look at immigration history, this simply has not been true. And alarmist discourses framing immigrants as national security threats. I think terrorists of today, and you can think about anarchists of the past or communists of the past, or as public burdens, healthcare burdens of today, and what were called paupers and dependents of the past, or public health charges. HIV/AIDS is an issue today. In the past, I think it was things like tuberculosis and cholera. Or immigrants as unfair labor competition. You can think about the Latino day workers today, and the Asian or Chinese coolies of the past. These are recurring themes in the history of U.S. immigration. And legal status actually has never been a perfect protection for anybody. You just have to look at the Japanese Americans during World War II to realize this. But undocumented immigrants who lack even many of the limited legal protections that legal immigrants and citizens have really been really stood out throughout history as one of the most vulnerable populations that social workers have come into contact with. So just to give you some examples of the fact that this topic is not new to anybody and not to social work, I wanted to show you some texts from social work journals of the past. So I came across these two articles in the journal Social Work. This is what I mean by it's going to be really text heavy. It goes against all the things you're supposed to do in PowerPoint presentations, but so be it. So one's from 79, the other one's from 89. An unresolved issue facing the nation today is the influx of illegal aliens from Mexico to the United States. And that was in 1979. Have things changed much? No. And sort of prophetically, in 1989, as is often the case, social workers experience firsthand the effects of social policy decisions on their clients. Unless the majority of undocumented immigrants return to their native country, social workers will find themselves attempting to remedy the effects of an immigration policy that prevents the undocumented alien from attaining satisfactory living conditions. Have things changed much? I don't think so. And lest you think that this is, it's not that far back in the past, so it's not that much of an old history, I wanted to show you some stuff from earlier parts of the 20th century. So these are two quotes from Graham Taylor, who's one of the founders of the Chicago School of Social Work. And he does kind of a meta-analysis about the issue of undocumented immigration, especially Mexican immigration back then. And I wanted to show you both of these because they sounded so familiar. Restricted immigration, agriculture will be ruined if we do. and the republic, the nation, the American nation, will be undermined if we don't. And he lists a bunch of different motivations for why people actually oppose Mexican immigration and undocumented immigration. Race suicide, you just have to read some of the more conservative journals for this or turn on Fox News. Inferior races, so on and so forth. The border itself has been problematized for a very long time. And again, these are all from social work journals, you guys. So Arizona's in the news a lot. It's been on our minds for quite a long time. California, Mexicans. So to me, it's interesting because, one of the reasons I'm showing you this, and this is something I say all the time whenever I give a talk on immigration history, one of the things that really bugs me about liberals, and I am one of those, is this tendency to be really surprised every time something like Arizona happens. Can't believe this is happening. So what I mean, and I think the problem with that is that we spend so much time being surprised that there's never any time to actually do anything. And I think that these things are, we can anticipate them because they've been happening over and over and over and over if we simply studied a little bit of history. So it's not that they're not outrageous anymore, and it's not the outrage that I'm talking about. It's really that element of surprise where you sort of think, I can't believe this is happening. So it's also been a social work problem for a very long time, explicitly so. So educators and social workers all over Southern California talking about these issues all the way back in 1925. Talking about dependency and delinquency among border towns, as we do today. And then pay attention to the bottom one, because this is actually a very, 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 very pertinent issue today as well. Evidence was found, however, during visits to the Mexican border, that the fear of deportation because of acceptance of relief, government aid, or other public assistance was deeply rooted in several Mexican communities. So this is partly due to a deportation raid, but usually it was the result of unsocial attitudes on the part of some local public officials, read social workers. So problem has been around for a long time. I don't know what we have done as a profession to actually address it very much, because it sure has not gone away. And actually, I'm going to run out of time because we started late, so I'm going to go through these really rather quickly because this is the old stuff. But there's various ways that we have problematized undocumented immigration. Cassie, are you counting the numbers that I say problematize in this presentation? So criminalizing undocumented immigrants. And when they're talking about Mexicans, they're not talking about all undocumented in these cases, but both. And I want you to remember these categories because they come up again in the survey that we just did 2 years ago. Was it a year ago? Some time ago. Notion of alienation, meaning they are alien. Racially alien? I love that one. The Mexican peon is racially as alien as the Chinese coolie. That's really bad. And the last part there, the Mexican peon is not a white man. He's an Indian. And remember, these are social workers writing this. So, and socially and politically, large numbers of Mexicans give rise to very serious problems, so on and so forth. They're illiterate, they're slow to learn English, they're not assimilating. They're also labor competition. This thing has been identified for a very long time, 1912. They're direct competition, and when they do, they really become a problem for other people. who are in the country. This one is a work of beauty. Perhaps we've come a little bit, you know, become a little bit better than this, hopefully. I wanted to show you this one last one. I hope you guys are fast readers. So the issue of race becomes something that gets raised over and over and over about immigrants in general, but about Mexican and Latin American immigrants a lot. Done? If you want to read more about this, email me and I'll send you the slides. Just so, as long as you get the idea that this is an issue that's come up over and over and over, and we've been talking about this and marking it in some way since the early part of the 20th century. So a little bit about the undocumented. I just wanted to give you some quick stats. These are 2008 numbers. There are 11.9 million estimated. And this is a number that went slightly down from the year before, and people think that it has to do with the economic downturn. They constitute 4% of the nation's population. And interestingly, more than that for the nation's workforce. The workforce is really kind of interesting. 14% of our construction industry, 13% of our agriculture, 10% of our leisure and hospitality industry, 28% of landscaping, they're all in California, 23% of those who are in private household employment are undocumented, and 20% of workers in the dry cleaning and laundry industry. And what this tells me is that they provide not only services that support the lifestyles of, you know, the elite, the wealthy, but very middle-class American households. Moreover, 1.5 million are children under the age of 18. And 3.8 million are parents of U.S.-born children. And what that means is that about 4 million U.S.-born children live in mixed-status households. And mixed-status household is a household in which at least one parent is a an undocumented person. And what all these numbers should tell you, especially the bottom numbers, is that this is an issue of concern for social workers. They're going to be in social work offices. Especially because the immigrants are coming, and undocumented immigrants are coming. They're not going to the old traditional stomping grounds of New York and California. They're spreading out throughout the country. The South and the Midwest are seeing huge numbers. So it's no longer, working with immigrants and working with undocumented population is no longer this sort of niche job, not just a specialty kind of a job, but you might be coming across them anywhere that you might be placed. And you may not know this because many of them are in mixed status households. So to turn to the study of practitioners' views of immigrants, what the study, again, just to reiterate, is about who deserves help, who should be included and who should be excluded. What is our relationship to law, social policies, and our own professional ethics and identity as a profession? So whom do we serve? But more importantly, I think it really is about whom should we serve? Who do we think we should be serving? And to me, these questions and the views that the respondents have put out are illustrative. They illustrate the ways in which we determine deserts. Who deserves what? Who deserves our resources? Who deserves our attention? And this sort of weighing of inclusion and exclusion that you're going to see in social work practitioners, it's really a microcosm. It's a writ large in national immigration policy. Who gets in and who doesn't get in, right? But that parallel dynamic is being played out in social work and in social services. So just as a brief cap of, there were basically three different positions. There were a lot of people who were for undocumented immigration. That's not quite true. Nobody was for undocumented immigration, let's say. But there were a lot of people who sort of spoke out for undocumented immigrants. There were a lot more people who spoke out against undocumented immigrants. And the majority of the people were utterly, utterly conflicted. So I'm going to show you both, all three of those things. So on the for side, these are some examples of what people wrote in. And sometimes I've shortened them so they're not actually the full text, but I haven't changed anything that they've hopefully mean to say. Pretty general. I believe that even if a person is in a country illegally, they should be afforded basic human rights. And then a last one here. And this is a person who works in an agency who provides services to undocumented. So what we do not ask for status, meaning we're not asking them if they're undocumented. So what do you notice about these? Anything? Sorry? Yeah, the human rights. Mm-hmm. And it's a good point. The other thing that really, really struck me is I kept looking at it going, what are basic human rights? And basic needs. So we're not going to give them non-basic needs, but they're okay to get basic needs. So many of the comments that were actually for undocumented were always qualified by this kind of sense. They can have the basic services, but you know, really, I guess the implication is they can't have what are non-basic services. Although nobody really talked about, well, not many people did about what the differences might be. An example of. Oops, am I like against? People writing against. There's many of these, I'm only going to show you two for now. The caps were not added by me. You know, on the fourth slide, you saw, like Shannon said, people drew on the discourses of human rights, social justice, and so on, and espoused the view that social workers have a clear ethical obligation to serve undocumented, right? As long as it's basic services. Despite the fact that they lack legal rights to be here. And in this one, what's interesting is that the ones that are against undocumented, these undocumented or illegal or irregular migrants are always sort of positioned outside the conventional bounds of social work. They're generally viewed by, and I'll show you what I mean as I go along, they're generally viewed by these respondents as kind of transgressive bodies that are lodged, you know, in the midst of our country without permission. And they're definitely seen as a population who are outside the bounds of social work services. They are excluded from our services. So the conflicted ones go something like this, for the most part. So you might ask, what's there to be conflicted about? So there appears to be a dilemma among almost everyone who are conflicted. And the dilemma goes something like this. And it's about scarcity of resources, for the most part. It's not just about the scarcity of resources, but scarcity of resources is something that almost everyone agrees on. And to me, you know, at first glance, all of the ones that I showed you, even the ones who are against undocumented, are really pretty familiar sentiments, right? And I mean, when I first looked at them, I thought, you know, these are pretty unobjectionable. They're fairly accurate. We do lack resources in social services. And so I can see why there would be an ethical dilemma about this. And then I started thinking about it a little bit more and thought, so the vulnerable. Demographic data on undocumented show that they define vulnerability insofar as client populations go. High rates of poverty in conjunction with lack of any, practically any social safety nets, and no legal structures to actually protect them. So, you know, they suffer the worst vicissitudes of any economic downturn or any kind of changes in society. And so to me, it's a population that define marginalization. And they have really high rates of workforce participation, much higher than both legal immigrants and citizens, but they suffer undue poverty. So this number is, this is how it works out. So a third of the children are poor, and a fifth of the adult population, and it's nearly double the poverty rates for US-born people. And because they tend to be concentrated in less skilled jobs and low-wage labor market, they're really less likely to have any private health insurance or any other kinds of financial assistance. And as you well know, they are absolutely ineligible for any federal benefits. So no SSI, no Social Security, no food stamps, no TANF, no Medicaid, no Medicare. The only thing they're eligible for is public education and emergency medical services. So there really are no safety nets. So given that they are this vulnerable population, and given the NASW Code of Ethics, what could be the dilemma? So this really became the center of what I was trying to find out among these data. And so where's the rub, right? And the rub seems to be that the core of the ethical dilemma really was a tension that underlie two different things. The need to reconcile this. So idea about plurality, inclusion, and diversity, and all those good things that we teach you and talk about, and we all seem to profess to believe, rubbing up against this second thing. And just to get it a little bit more clearly what I'm talking about there, I'm going to show you a slide, the next slide, that I'm calling the liberal dilemma. And this is a quote from the historian May Nye. She writes about immigration, and she says this. So she's saying that central, there's an absolute dilemma that all liberals face, which is has to do with the tension between good liberal politics about inclusion, plurality, and all those things, and the absolute centrality of the rights of sovereign nations to draw its border wherever it wants, people its population in the way that it wants. So a belief in a nation and a belief in a nation's right to actually pass laws and do what it wants, rubbing up against this idea and working against this idea that we should be nice to everybody. We like everybody. We celebrate cultures and we celebrate everything. This kind of idea. And what I'm arguing is that this debate, this liberal dilemma, this conflict that May Nye is talking about is absolutely parallel in social work. So what's going on in social work is this idea that we should celebrate diversity and we should be pluralist and we like all kinds of, you know, people and everything, except we have this notion that our services, we can decide who should be included and excluded. Right? And hopefully, so these are the two contradictory ideals again that I'm calling, in case you're confused. So at debate, In these textual responses, are conflicts about whether social work's avowed values of diversity, equity, social justice should and do extend to the undocumented. A population who are, by the legal code of the nation, render outside its polity. So they're not really us. So do we need to serve them? It's a simple way to put it. And particularly given the ever-present scarcity of resources in social services, this is the single point on which all respondents agreed. How should the profession make sense of the undocumented population's really undeniable need for services? So thus the title of this talk, Whom Do We Serve? And more importantly, whom are we obligated to serve? So the question really is, where do we draw the borders of social work? So we have the national borders. Some people get in and some people don't. Where do we draw the borders of the professional social work, right? So one of the ways that our respondents draw those borders is what I'm calling the rule of law argument. And it goes something like this. I'll read it to you. I believe strongly in the rule of law. Provide a path to legal status or deport, but don't sit on the fence. Again, I did not put the caps there. They can come, but they need to do it the right way. Third one, illegal means not legal. I'm strongly in favor of legal immigrants, but cannot condone people coming into the country illegally and using resources that are scarce enough for the people who are already here legally. People are sympathetic to the plight that illegal immigrants may face in their countries of origin, but it comes down to the fact that by being in this country illegally, without documentation, they are breaking the law. Personally, I have no problem with the immigrants of any race that come to the country legally, but I do not believe that those that are here illegally should be given all the privileges of US citizens. This person need not worry, because they are not. There is a process in place for them to come to the country legally. They need to follow it. If they don't, they should be deported. Okay, so reliance, there are laws and people should follow them. A reasonable stance, right? But there are at least two problems with this, kind of an argument. And the first to me is that it really occludes the reality that existing legal mechanisms for immigration are insufficient. So they're making it sound as if the choice is between coming here legally or illegally. But the reality of it is that the choice is between coming here illegally or not coming at all, really. So the choice isn't really a choice in the sense that they're putting it out to be. Secondly, this idea of legal, let me show you this first before I go on. So Nicholas de Genova, who writes a lot about migration, says that this kind of illegality, the undocumented, it really doesn't involve a crime against anybody. It's really only a crime against this notion of sovereign nations. It's about sovereignty that's being transgressed, right? And this notion of sovereignty and the idea about nation states has been really problematized for a second time, third time, for a very, very, very long time in all kinds of literature. So, and for me, to take seriously the illegality of the undocumented at face value is also really to take, without critique, the indisputable justice of existing immigration laws. To say there are laws and these are good laws and we need to accept them. And if you study immigration history for even for 10 minutes, you will realize really very quickly that our immigration history really has been a history of bigotry. Bigotry of all kinds. There are really only two, actually there's only one immigration law which has actually ever encouraged immigration. You can ask me later what that law is, but so it's really a history that's replete with violence and exclusion based on things like race, gender, sexuality, all kinds of problematic things that we don't like as social workers. So, and that the idea of citizenship itself, it really is sort of taken as the hallmark of liberal emancipation. You have a citizen, so you're protected, right? So, you know, each person for a country and a country for each person. And that's how you sort of look at how human beings are protected in modern society. But the notion of citizenship has also been problematized over and over and over and over as things that are really exclusionary rather than inclusionary. And then if you really think about the whole notion about globalization, so what people call neoliberal policies of globalization also has been critiqued to hell, right? So this idea that capital can move from country to country freely and money can flow, but when it comes to the free migration of people, we are dead set against this. And what critics say is that this differential really is a benefit to rich corporations and people who are already wealthy, and it really, really is at the expense of poor people all over the globe. So, to me, to say that you have to follow the rules because rules exist, and to follow those rules without actually contesting the legality of the laws, actually, to me, is a bit of a problem. So what's missing here? To me, what's missing is a really kind of a structural analysis. And what that means is that many of our respondents who look at legality and look at this kind of, who do the rule of law argument, really are looking at the sense of legality as an individual transgression. It resides in the body of the undocumented. And what they're not looking at is that it perhaps resides in the laws themselves. So they're not doing a structural analysis saying, what's going on? What is the context? What is the structural context in which immigration occurs? Therefore, so instead of problematizing the larger structures, what gets problematized is the individual behavior. And I think it's easier to probably problematize 8 times now. Individuals rather than laws, which are sort of vague and big and difficult to actually point at. But I wanted to give you one example about, this is a really simple way to see this, and it's about the adjudication of refugees in international law. So in order to become a refugee, you have to cross a national border. And you're not doing it by invitation, right? So if there's a war here, you're gonna go over to Canada without any visa, without your passport or anything like that. So if you don't cross that national border, then you're what's called an IDP, an internally displaced population, and not a refugee. And a refugee gets a lot more services, basically. So what that tells me is that the actual act of crossing the border uninvited is not an illegal act, right? Because both undocumented and refugees do this. The difference is that you're crossing for supposedly 2 different sets of reasons. One is a sanctioned set of reasons, and the other is not a sanctioned set of reasons. And if you really think about this, then the illegality doesn't reside in the body that crosses. It's in the laws that says, this set of laws, you're hungry, you need a job, that's not okay. That makes you illegal. You've been persecuted for, you know, political stuff. That's okay. Not to diminish what refugees have gone through, but do you see that there is a difference? So illegality, to me, is a social legal construction. This is what is meant by social legal construction, rather than a condition of being. So you can look at the laws being problematic, just as well as you can look at the people transgressing those laws as being problematic. And what the people that I've shown you so far are doing is to see the people as being problematic. And one of the ways that they do this, the issue becomes a little bit more clear, I think, is that that illegality also becomes an issue of morality for people writing this. So here's somebody who's writing that social workers assisting undocumented are participating in fraud. And, you know, even if illegality is not unto itself a fraudulent behavior, an amoral behavior, there's a bunch of people writing in that it will eventually inevitably lead to either criminality or amorality. So as the migration scholar Susan Kooten says, it's as if immigrants, as undocumented cross the borders without authorization, it's as though a border forms around them, alienating from their social surroundings and making their very humanity questionable, right? So, you know, another way to think about this stuff is, you know, to think about what's social work's relationship to the law. What is its responsibility for upholding social codes and legal policies, right? And I was thinking that there are long-standing practice arenas in social work where law and illegality and the provision of social services to people who do illegal behavior occur. Some examples might be substance abusers, juvenile delinquents, people who abuse or neglect their children. All acts that are illegal, but none of these acts unto themselves actually excise that person from being thought of as somebody who can receive services, right? So it's not a cause for it, the exclusion from being a client. So the question really to think about then is that what then makes immigration status different? What about this particular type of illegality renders this population outside the pale? This sort of the irredeemable other, right? So what about this status makes the undocumented, for many of our practitioners in this study, where the lines, where the borders of social work services get drawn? Who becomes deserving and undeserving? One of, I think, that things that explain it is the sense of nativism that's shot through these. And I wanted to show you this because this is from 1906. And although it's an old idea, it still remains entrenched in my read. And nativism does not mean Native Americans. So there's this whole discourse in these responses that talk about undeserving aliens. And this type of responses always pit, there's a binary that's created. It's citizens versus undocumented. And it always pits one side against the other, and it's this idea. So there are already insufficient resources, and undocumented are coming and using up those resources. I think in the middle of all of that, sort of throughout all this, is kind of a structural analysis that they're saying that the system is really, really not working, right? But that systemic analysis is, to me, doesn't read as a structural analysis that says, why are there no resources? Why are we struggling with so few resources? It always gets sort of embodied in the body of the undocumented. So it becomes, they're the problems. They're coming up and using the resources, right? So it's kind of a zero-sum game always. And so the undocumented are seen not only are they undeserving because they are not legal, but also because they're using up the resources that they already don't deserve simply by being illegal, right? This is an example of the difference between citizen versus other that I thought was pretty clear. I think if any of you know social psychology, this notion of instrumental model of group conflict, this idea that whenever you can sort of identify, there's a resource stress, right? And then you can identify a population that's an out-group, then what you end up getting is this perceived sense of competition for resources. And it always operates out of a zero-sum game. There's only a certain amount and you don't really, so if you this pot of money gets spent on this population, then there's just gonna be less for everybody. Very much this idea that there's a draining of social services. So for respondents in this type of this group, then the ethical conflict really lies in the conflict between the core professional imperative to serve all those vulnerable people against this really discomforting sense that serving the undocumented and illegal and therefore already illegitimate and undeserving population also diminishes resources for those who are here legitimately. So this also sounds fairly reasonable, right? There's limited resources. We know this. But there's also complicating factors that really you need to think about, or I need to think about, we need to think about when we're assessing this. So are undocumented benefits or burdens? This is a highly debated topic, but so this is a U.S. Department of Labor. I'm not giving you, you know, ultra-left-wing stats here. They're ineligible for welfare, food stamps, everything else I just said. Oh, by the way, all those negative comments about citizens versus were from hospital social workers, and it's not because they're particularly mean or particularly conservative, but if you think about the fact that where people undocumented can get services is emergency medical services, they see a lot of undocumented populations. So I think it's a matter of that rather than anything else. So according to the Department of Labor, there's $586 billion plus in Social Security. That's in what's called an earned suspense file. So undocumented workers have put it in, but they're not eligible to get it back. And this is growing by about $66 billion a year. That's a lot of money. And this is a little bit complicated, but what these numbers also don't tell you is that the undocumented Social Security earnings also is like a one-time bump up. And what that means is that you are currently paying for people who are drawing money out of Social Security. So in essence, you're paying for an older generation. Undocumented to come to this country and start working, they don't have an older generation that they're paying for. So there's a one-time boost to the Social Security. So it's actually a bigger boost than I think that these numbers are saying. So are they a benefit or a burden, especially if you think about how much of the space in the labor market that we were talking about? Yeah. For your number. I actually have never thought that. Maybe we could provide a matching service or something. Kind of like a dating service, but for, you know. So what's missing from this analysis? Again, it's kind of a structural analysis, I think. Just as our respondents earlier tended to problematize undocumented immigrants rather than immigration law, I think here people are looking at undocumented immigrants who are using resources rather than questioning the whole setup, which is why is there so little money for social services? Right, so it's like you're arguing for one little slice of the pie as opposed to arguing who's got the rest of the pie here idea. Another way in which the undocumented are really sort of rendered alien and outside is, how much time do I have, by the way? Okay, I'm just gonna go until I run out of time, so is this culture thing. My favorite word. And this, again, is from 1922. I think this is from Social Service Review or something like that. So I need a different word than problematize. Problematizing immigrants for their purported inability or unwillingness to surrender their alien culture and to acquire ours, whatever that is, has been a consistent theme in the American discourses of immigration and social works as well, as this shows you. So this is from the study. So another person who strongly believes in legal immigration but not we are a nation of immigrants. I believe immigrants should come in legally and be required to learn English and work in gainful legal employment if they plan to stay. I think we should have a limited 1 to 2 years to learn English and to get a job and get, you know, whatever, legal employment and all that sort of stuff. While I believe in valuing the customs of your culture of origin, I still value my Norwegian roots. I don't believe that as immigrants, people should expect the receiving country to accommodate the culture of the immigrant by changing the culture of America or any other country. So this is straightforward assimilation. Nothing about acculturation, right? If I chose to immigrate back to Norway, I would do so because I wanted to enmesh myself in that culture. I would not expect them to accommodate to my specific needs. So much for all our cultural diversity training. Yeah. To mess things up, yeah, mess things up, and also to, there's a sense of entitlement that's portrayed in all this. Well, so I think, you know, these are the things that we need to start thinking about as educators and as schools of social work. What are we teaching about this stuff? And I'll show you a slide about that, about what they're saying we're teaching. But I honestly, as I said from the very beginning, there's beginning to be some discussion about undocumented populations, but there really is not that much. There's like a huge gap from the 19, so a lot of that stuff that I showed you from early periods is from 1920s, because 1924 is when the Border Patrol was set up. So whenever there's something like that happens, there's a bit of literature, a bit of a flurry, but social work literature generally has not been very involved in this topic at all, or about immigration in many ways. This lack of English sufficiency really gets played out a lot. And there's, as I said, the sense of entitlement that's implied. So to show you a different slide here. And in this set of responses where the people talk about culture or assimilation and lack of English language skills and sort of, whereas before it was citizens versus undocumented, it becomes legal immigrants versus undocumented. The binary changes. To good immigrants versus bad immigrants, to put it in a crude way. I would love to see how many years it would take that person to learn French or anything for that matter. Right. So again, you're pointing out to what I'm arguing is sort of a contextualized structural argument, right? So it always resides in the body of the undocumented, the problem. They're not doing something, they're doing something. So there's not a larger structural discussion. I'm not going to call on you because I'm going to move on. You're going to have to hold on to that question for a while. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, the support for political refugees has diminished down to, what, like 3 months now? So that's always getting undercut, too. And the idea that somehow earlier immigrants, their assimilation was this swift and unproblematic, I think is in itself a myth. Edith Abbott said in 1924, this is a quote from her, all European immigrants, except perhaps for the English Protestants were attacked as unassimilable immigrants in an earlier generation, whether it was the Irish, the whatever. So it wasn't quite that rosy of a past that they're thinking. And again, the sense of entitlement here. I love this top one. I'm sorry. So these are, the bottom one is really similar to what I showed you before. But again, the sense that there's an entitlement that used to not be here among immigrants. And again, what's missing here is this structural argument. What's happening in the society that doesn't allow for this kind of a thing? I mean, leaving aside the question, the really important question of whether assimilation is a desirable thing at all, what people are not looking at here is the what's going on in their lives so that they're not able to do this, right? People write that the undocumented are literally hunted down in streets and in their jobs and in their homes. There's a whole technique of surveillance going on, the critic Leo Chavez calls this population, he says that undocumented live in what he calls a perpetual liminal space. They're here but not really here, right? So the question to be asked is how such a population living under constant threat, here but not here, in kind of a shadow world, are to integrate into a society which it is not considered a viable part. We don't want you, but you should be assimilating. Right? It really defies logic in many ways. So what's not preventing such an integration, not to mention the fact that we so to cap, really, what's missing is a contextualized analysis. And this is a quote, just to give you something hopeful from the past, is Jane Addams, who said, "The immigrant is continually blamed." Not that she was herself unproblematic in her thinking about immigrants, but she did say this intelligent thing. And I wanted to show you some slides where people actually were pro-immigrants. One person said it's all political. It's not about individual transgressions. It's all about politics. So illegal immigration is about poverty. Instead of building walls, we should be investing in education, infrastructures, and that it's a social policy and economic issue. And what do you see about these? How would you typify these? I would call these much more structural analyses. So almost every single response that I can describe as evincing a positive attitude towards the undocumented had this structural analysis within it. It means that the problems were not personalized. It did not reside in the body of the undocumented, but within the laws of the society. So much more of this, was that enough hopeful stuff? Did I show you enough? Not, you know, we'll move on quickly from there. So I wanted to just show you a couple of slides about what people are saying about overall, about how they're feeling about social work education. So, Josh would appreciate this, because what are the quantitative part of the survey, which I'm not showing you, really showed that people who said that they've had immigration content in policy courses were much more likely to have a favorable attitude towards undocumented and immigrants in general than people who said they didn't have this content. And what it also showed was that people who had who said that they had immigration content about immigration in practice classes were not at all likely to have a higher. In fact, I think they were actually shown to have a lower content, lower likely to have positive attitude towards to immigrants. And I think some of this is what these people are getting at. And the way I explain that differential between policy courses and practice classes is really that, you know, in practice classes and in sort of diversity trainings and things like that, you sort of teach people about you should be, I don't know, nicer to people. You should respect people's cultures. You know, Korean food is great, whatever it may be. But it's not sticking. So this kind of sort of way of saying be nice to everybody and it, you know, celebrate people's culture is not sticking, is what our results are showing. And what our results are showing is that where it works is if you show people and teach content that's about what are the structural conditions that push immigration, that make immigration and migration happen. Right. So looking at larger social political structures is what seems to be making a difference. So this one, I'll read you this one last one that I didn't put on there because I thought it was actually really kind of sad. One respondent said, can you please help social workers to get more information about illegal immigration laws? And that one really was repeated so many times, where people are saying, we're getting trainings about cultural diversity and diversity, whatever, but we're not getting any information about the laws and the politics and the legal structures and the political structures around which these things occur. So, I'm going to skip that one. In case you were wondering, I'm going to give you my position, and I'm doing this in part because my students in social cultural the other day said that I never talk about my own position, which I think is always so clear. But so my own position on this is that the content of social justice and social work cannot be bound by national borders or constrained by existing regulations. Borders shift, and the valuation of what constitutes a full human being and who is a viable member of the polity change. And such designations are temporary and always contingent. Therefore, it's both historically naive and ethically hazardous to accept without critique and contestation existing laws as valid guides to legitimate some and not others as acceptable members of our society or acceptable clients within social work. As I'm going to read you the rest of this. As the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which is how we got most of the Southwest during the United States, and the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and 19th U.S. constitutional amendments attest, national borders shift. Right? If social work is, as I believe it to be, as much about advocating for social change as it is about ameliorating social needs, then views among practitioners, as well as society at large, that reify and maintain naturalized taxonomies of worth and belonging must be continually challenged. It's a problem, these binaries that I've been talking about. And given this position and given my politics on this, it's all the more tempting for me to argue that those people who talk about structural problems, structural context, and those people who are really, really the good social workers, they have values. And then the people who talk about sort of illegals and we don't want them, so on, those are bad social workers. And that they don't have any values. It's really tempting to go there. But I think it's more complicated than that. And to me, let me show you this. This response from a social worker is really illustrative of this complexity. The difficulty isn't that one side has values and the other side doesn't have values. It's just that there's absolutely profoundly different interpretations about what those values should look like. And what I mean by that is that if you read this statement, if you did that, it sounds like we would get the answer, right? Get to the root of the problem. And instead of just, you know, talking about this nonsense, you gotta come up with real solutions. But if you start thinking about this and doing a little bit of analysis, what you really quickly see, or at least what I see, is that what the root of the problem is debated and not agreed upon. What real solutions are is debated and not agreed upon. And more importantly, what our population is that are becoming marginalized is not agreed upon. I just showed you in all the ways that that's not agreed upon, right? So taking a simple statement like this, you can't actually actualize it because nobody agrees in social work. So to me, the difficulty is that not that one side lacks values and there's a lack of values. I mean, we're supposed to be a you know, value-driven, what is the? Value-driven profession. I just think that the problem really isn't a lack of values, it's just that there's an absolute embarrassment of values that don't agree and do conflict. So what do we do about this? Because a disagreement really is about where the borders of social work should be drawn, who should be included and who should not be included, who deserves and who doesn't deserve, right? So what should we do about this? As I promised you, got no answers. Martinez and Gulda, in a recent article in 2009, said that social workers in the USA have not been particularly active in trying to modify the public's vision of immigrants. And to me, this is a clear example of what I said in the beginning about how we want to jump to solutions without actually standing around for a bit to think about how do you actually modify the public's vision when we have no agreement on what that vision should look like? So to me, before we can do any of that kind of work, what we really need to do is to become active in debate. Given that we have so many disagreements and social work is a wide and diverse field and we're not going to agree on this, to really come up with a uniform plan about this, so everyone needs to agree that, you know, Yusun is right and that borders should be open, let's say. That really is a recreation of the kind of thinking that allows undocumented immigrants to become popular, to problematized, right? Do you see that? Thank you. So I don't think that's the answer here. But what I would like to argue for is an open and vigorous debate about this. We're not even talking about this. So it's really hard to even figure out, have a conversation about what do you think about this? What do I think about this? How does the profession move on here? What does the profession think about this? So even if you're not having open discussions about this and debates about this, you're not going to ever get to a place, I don't know that we ever will, to even just beginning to formulate ideas about how should the profession deal with this issue. But the thing is, because we disagree, it becomes a very difficult problem to even have conversations about this. So I'm going to leave you with one idea that I really like. And it's this notion of an agonistic pluralism. And these two post-Marxist people, Chantal Mouffe and Ernst Laclau, talk about this. But this is the quotes I'm going to show you are from Chantal Mouffe. So she says, what an agonistic pluralism is, a commitment to civil debate that acknowledges pluralism's inherently conflictual aspect. Meaning, there's going to be conflict. It's not going to be nice in the sense that you're not going to come to an agreement. So what they say is that you can't wait till people agree to have this conversation. You're not going to get people on the same page, and if you're going to wait for that, you're going to wait forever. And what this agonistic pluralism really requires is a deep belief in the idea that your ideological opponent, that person you absolutely disagree with, is somebody with whose ideas that we are going to struggle, and struggle vehemently, but whose right to defend those ideas that we will never question. I think this is a difficult position to be, but when I'm saying that it's not that people don't have values on either side, it's just that there's too many values. If we actually believe in pluralism, and belief in pluralism is what would actually allow us to come to a position which says we cannot problematize undocumented populations, and I think that we're going to have to try to do this. That's it.